I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
I'm going to give the audience what I think they want.
They want chase scenes and car crashes.
They want the cops to bend the rules to get the job done. They want the boy to get the girl. They want the good guy to win. They want the bad guy to die, hopefully in the biggest explosion the budget will allow. But most importantly, Senator, they want to walk into a theater and for 90 minutes forget the fucking mess that you have left of this nation.
Go get your bubblegum.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome back to the All Out of Bubblegum podcast. I am Marty and I am once again joined by Brandon.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm looking forward to today's conversation.
Yes.
Today we are going to be talking about Christopher McQuarrie's directorial debut, The Way of the Gun.
Yes, and I'm glad I got a chance to rewatch this film. First time I saw it, I thought it was okay. Some good action, but not really my thing. But I watched it again, and now I like it. I think this is a good movie now.
Oh, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about this because by the time this podcast episode comes out, I think Mission Impossible The Final Reckoning will be playing or about to enter theaters.
Yeah, that's right.
Give or take, and probably bring along with it world peace. That movie looks fucking awesome.
Yes, I think it brings people together like Tom Cruise doing dangerous stunts. Yep.
Yes. I mean, people in Israel are going to be watching that going like, what the fuck are we still doing? Why are we just... This is what life's all about. This right here.
Yes. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I especially like the last Mission Impossible. That was actually probably my favorite so far, believe it or not. I know a lot of people are kind of down on it, but I was watching that thinking, what would I improve? Okay, nothing. Therefore, it's probably my favorite so far.
Okay. Okay.
But, well, I mean, a lot of them are good, but yeah.
Yeah, I like all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here.
I think I'd say Ghost Protocol is my favorite, but like they're all great. So
yeah, it's not much of a competition when they're all that good.
Yeah. Yeah, Christopher McQuarrie's directorial debut was The Way of the Gun in the year 2000. He obviously made it big in 1995 when he wrote The Usual Suspects.
Mm-hmm.
I think he won an Oscar for it even.
I think so too. And he also did some uncredited writing for Batman and Robin, according to Wikipedia, which probably also helped his career a lot.
Oh, yeah. I think like all the stuff he did uncredited work for, that's enough to fill an entire episode.
Oh, yeah.
He worked a lot with Bryan Singer, but he's not credited for X-Men 1 and 2.
Oh.
But he probably did rewrites on those.
Okay, okay.
He did some uncredited writing on Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Oh.
And then he would go on to direct the series, starting with Part 5.
Mm-hmm. Rogue Nation. Yeah.
Rogue Nation. Yeah. And I think he met Tom Cruise when he did Valkyrie, which was directed by Bryan Singer. He wrote it. And obviously Tom Cruise starred in it.
Okay, I didn't know that. Start
a beautiful friendship.
Yes. Yes. Before this, the Mission Impossible series would like hand it over to a new director every episode. But now when Christopher McQuarrie took over, they said, you're our guy. You're sticking.
Yeah. He had directed two movies at that point, The Way of the Gun and Jack Reacher, also starring Tom Cruise.
Yes.
Which was, I think, quite similar to The Way of the Gun.
I don't remember much about it, but the first Jack Reacher with Tom Cruise, yeah, that's a good movie that kind of has some of that tactical gunplay stuff in it. Yeah.
Yeah, the tough-talking bad guys. Well, bad guys, badass guys.
Yeah.
Though, of course, Jack Reacher is a likable guy, which is a big difference from the one we're talking about today.
Yes, big difference.
Yeah, because every character in The Way of the Gun is an asshole, basically.
Yeah, maybe that's why I didn't like it the first time I watched it. I don't know, but I mean, I get it more this time, so thumbs up now. But first viewing, maybe I just hated everybody and wanted them all to die. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll be getting into spoilers as well in this episode, should say, right up front.
Yeah.
which is, every character is an asshole, but like the movie knows it.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So the movie's not trying to condone their behavior or like give them redemption at the end.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of a problem I had with The Wild Bunch, which inspired The Way of the Gun. Because in The Wild Bunch, it's like, these characters are so evil. Why would I want to root for them? And then at the end, it's like, they're redeeming themselves. This big epic shootout. Which is a great shootout, don't get me wrong. But I didn't really get the redemption arc there. I like the movie The Wild Bunch, but it's just not really my thing.
They do all die in that one, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is good. Yeah. I didn't like anybody in that movie.
Yeah. You said it was an inspiration, but Christopher McQuarrie said it's not an inspiration when it comes to style, only that it's a bunch of assholes in a brothel in the desert shooting each other.
Yes.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Also, Christopher McQuarrie's favorite film, apparently, is The Big Country, starring Charlton Heston.
Oh, and Gregory Peck. Yeah, that, I didn't know that. Not my favorite Cheston movie, but that's a surprise. I didn't know that.
I've never seen it. Is it anything like The Wild Bunch?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
And supposedly that... Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, like, another inspiration for this film would be The Professionals with Lee Marvin and Burt Lancaster, because you can hear in the music that kind of cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha-cha- notes of the Professionals theme with Lee Marvin and Burt Lancaster. So it's another Western movie that inspired The Way of the Gun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's very much neo-Western.
Oh, yeah.
If that is a thing.
Yeah, it is.
But also, I also felt like it was heavily influenced by samurai movies.
Hey, I didn't catch that. I caught the neo-noir stuff and the neo-Western stuff, but I didn't catch the samurai stuff.
Well, it's sort of like the two rogue samurai. And obviously the title, The Way of the Gun.
Oh.
It sort of hints at The Way of the Sword, which is a more common expression. Yeah. I don't think The Way of the Gun is an expression, actually.
I don't think so either. But yeah, I can see that. They're kind of like the masterless samurai wandering around who are masters of what they do and go on their own adventures that are kind of amoral or immoral, I guess you could say.
Yeah. Yeah, at the start of the movie, they're just sort of, Benicio Del Toro, who also starred in The Usual Suspects, and Ryan Phillippe,
mm-hmm.
who apparently was very keen to do this movie because he was pretty much at the top of his fame, but he was like, I don't want to be famous, I want to be an actor. So that's why he really wanted to do this one. He was getting offers for a lot more money for what I think he thought were worse movies. I actually like him in this one.
Oh,
probably the most surprising thing to me.
Ryan Phillippe or Phillippe, I don't know how his name is pronounced. He did not seem like a convincing tough guy to me in this movie, which is probably like one of the biggest faults I had with the movie. Now, Benicio Del Toro, yeah, that guy comes across as a tough guy. I can believe him kicking my ass. But Ryan Phillippe, I don't know if I really believed him as a tough guy here. Maybe it's the hairdo. I don't know.
Well, is he an actual tough guy, though? Or is this just like he's just a guy who wants to be a tough guy? And he has some skills, but...
That's a good point. Yeah, I never thought about it that way. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe I would have preferred somebody else cast. But I mean, he didn't do a terrible job. I mean, he gives a good performance here, but it's just not... Maybe it's the hairdo. It doesn't really convince me that he's like going to go out and shoot a bunch of people.
It's too surfer dude, too 90s.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Yeah. That's what he wants you to think before he shoots you.
Oh, it's all part of the act. Oh, man, he's playing mind games with you.
Yes. But at the start of the movie, these two guys are just driving around, jerking off into cups.
Yes.
Giving blood, giving
pouring
semen.
Out the window. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he pisses in a bottle and pours it out the window, yeah. Which is weird, because, like, just stop the car.
That's what I was thinking,
what are you in
too.
A hurry for?
I don't know, he's practicing for that semen clinic or something. I don't know. Out of practice.
Yeah, they just make their living donating semen and blood, I guess.
At the same time.
Well, if you do it 11 times in a row, blood will come out.
Let me take a note of that.
Okay. A friend of mine told me. That's how I know.
Oh, friend. Okay.
Yeah. But then they overhear some talk at the sperm bank. It's like, what do you call them? Semen clinic? Is that? No. Sperm bank.
It's sperm bank, yeah.
Yeah, they overhear somebody talking about some rich folks having a surrogate mother. And they're like, ooh, we got to kidnap her and make some money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically all the setup. And it takes like 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
If that, yeah.
Yeah, this movie does not fuck around.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, this is turns out to be a lot more complex than they'd originally envisioned.
Yes, there's a whole bunch of twists and turns along the way. Maybe a bit too much for me at times, but yeah, it gets a little more complicated from there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a twist later on that, since I'd already seen it, I knew that James Caan is Juliette Lewis's dad. And this time I was like, yeah, it makes sense, but might just be too many coincidences. No, I guess it's not a coincidence, but...
Yeah, it does seem like a twist too far at times, like the bodyguard having an affair with the mother and that kind of stuff. It's like, how many twists do we need? Just get back to Jeffrey Lewis trying to get cell service. That's what I want to see in this movie. That's what I watch The Way of the Gun for. Yeah. See, like, Jeffrey Lewis struggling with a cell phone.
Yeah. Oh, my God. His character's introduction is just so funny.
Playing Russian roulette.
And his exit as well.
Yeah, I just want to be alone right now.
Yeah, when he's introduced, he just has an entire bag filled with Russian roulette guns.
Yeah, and his daughter shows up in this movie, Juliette Lewis, too. So it's a family affair.
Yeah, and she doesn't play his daughter, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, but yeah, Jeffrey Lewis, one of my favorite character actors. So seeing him show up made the movie. Not the shootouts, Jeffrey Lewis trying to get cell service. That's why I love this movie.
Yeah, because Juliette Lewis is the surrogate mother. They think they're going to kidnap her, ask for ransom. But it turns out the couple that she's carrying the baby for is, well, the guy is into some dirty money. A lot of dirty money.
Yeah.
And she has bodyguards played by Nikki Catt and Tay Diggs.
Yeah.
Who is great in this, by the way. I don't know what I knew him from, but he's maybe this.
Yeah, he leaves a big impression.
Oh, that's right. He was in House on Haunted Hill. Mm-hmm. Equilibrium.
Oh, Equilibrium. Oh, yeah. Was he the guy who gets his face chopped off? I can't remember.
Could be. I think so, yeah. No, but I think the first thing I remember seeing him in was this one, the first time I watched it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he just sort of went on to do... Wasn't he in some... Yeah, he was in Private Practice. Some TV show for moms, basically.
Okay. It's Mother's Day. No, I'm just
kidding. Yeah, they're great. They're Juliette Lewis's bodyguards. And great shootout, great car chase. Unconventional car chase.
Mm-hmm. They get out of the car and shoot a while and get back in.
Yeah. They try to lose Tay Diggs and Nikki... Oh, God, what's his name?
Cat.
Nikki Cat, yeah. Mm-hmm. By sort of just putting the car in drive and getting out.
it works, kind of, you know, they get away.
Yeah.
The movie does not end there, yeah.
It's unique. Mm-hmm. I genuinely don't think I've seen it in any other film.
I don't think so either, yeah. And it's interesting because the first half of that shootout where they kidnap Juliette Lewis is off screen, basically. You just hear the gunshots.
Yeah.
And for a while, you're like, are we going to miss out on a good shootout? But then we later enter into it, and it's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we stick with Juliette Lewis, and we find out that she just sort of wants to escape.
Yeah. She's told by the bodyguards, go up to the top floor of the hospital and stay there. But no, she wants to leave.
Yeah, walking right into Ryan Phillippe's arms. And getting caught.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that might be one of a case of a twist too far, like you said, or it might be why I like it. But every character has rather clear motivations and backstory, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Including Juliette Lewis, who might be the only person in this movie not an asshole.
Yes, that's fair to say.
Yeah, because she also lied about the baby.
Oh, yeah,
turns out
that's right.
The fertility doctor or whatever, is he... Oh, jeez. They keep saying that there was some stuff in Baltimore, but like, did he lose his license? Is he still practicing officially?
I got the impression that he lost his license, but... Is it? I don't know if it's directly stated in the movie. I don't know.
No.
Okay. I got the impression that he lost his license.
Yeah. Doing abortions or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, he's the real dad of the baby. And he's the son of Scott Wilson, who plays the dirty money guy.
Yeah. And isn't James Caan Scott Wilson's brother?
Oh, shit. Is he?
Oh, I can't remember. I just know that they look identical to each other. And don't they say that they're brothers?
Oh, wow. Yeah, could be. Yeah, I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah,
because at first I had a hard time telling James Caan and Scott Wilson apart from each other. I'm not gonna lie, they just look so similar to each other.
Really? Okay. No.
I don't know if I'm right, but I thought that was what it was.
James Caan is fucking great in this, though.
Mm-hmm. He's one of the guys that's hired to retrieve Juliette Lewis after she gets kidnapped.
Yeah, he's the bag man.
Yep. Get some help from Jeffrey Lewis.
Yeah. Yes.
By help, I mean he can't get his cell signal. Yeah.
And he hides out while they know where he is.
Yeah, they're like, there's a guy waiting for us by the motel. Yeah. He's just waiting behind there, you know. He's like, oh, I can't get a cell signal. Oh, my God.
Yeah, so yeah, basically they kidnap Juliette Lewis and then they need to set up a meeting so they can exchange her for money.
Mm-hmm.
And they wait. Is the motel in Mexico? Jesus, my memory is shit.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it is. A lot of Spanish signs there.
Yeah. Just another funny moment. After the motel shootout,
mm-hmm.
you can see the patrons just standing there looking like, oh, this is interesting.
It's a day that ends in Y.
Yeah.
There's a few moments that kind of reminded me of The Hitcher here, which is kind of a weird thing to say. Like,
yeah.
The scene when they're at like the gas station with all the trucks, you know, and you hear like the loud noises that the semis are making. And there's a different scene where they torture a guy by like stretching him on a rack. And that's a different scene too. So I don't know if The Hitcher inspired this or something. I don't know.
I had the same feeling.
Yeah.
It's not very similar in a lot of other ways, but yeah.
Yeah, I was waiting for Rutger Hauer to just like jump through somebody's windshield or something like that. That would have been cool. I would have paid to see that.
Yes. No, I think there were enough psychopaths in this movie already.
That is true. We don't need more complications with the plot or people's psychology here.
No. But yeah, so Benicio del Toro is sort of like an ex-special forces guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he has a lot of experience, which is why I think like Ryan Phillippe, he's good at what he does as well, but it's del Toro who calls the shots, basically.
Yeah, he's the one who leaves a bigger impression than Felipe. I don't know how his name is pronounced. But yeah, Benicio del Toro, he's a good one here.
Oh, yeah. He also apparently, he told Christopher McQuarrie wrote quite some dialogue for him, but he just said, no, cut it down. Less is more.
Hey, yeah. That's what you got to do sometimes.
And I can't say I disagree.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also interesting because this was like, he also became big with The Usual Suspects. And then he did this one in between Snatch and Traffic.
Ooh.
So he was at like his career high point.
Are you trying to tell me his career high point was not The Last Jedi?
No.
Okay. All right.
No, Snatch, Wave the Gun, and Traffic all came out in the same year.
Oh, wow. What a year.
Yeah.
For Benicio del Toro.
Yeah, 2 years before he did Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and he did William Friedkin's The Hunted and 21 Grams, Sin City afterward.
Mm.
So yeah, he was riding high.
Yeah.
And he was also in Miami Vice back in 1987.
And License to Kill, wasn't he in License to Kill?
Oh yeah, baby-faced Benicio in License to Kill. Which was only his second feature film.
Oh really? I knew it was early for him, but I didn't know it was that early.
Yeah, and he's great in it too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, here he plays the brains behind the operation, even though he tells James Caan, I don't think this is a brains kind of operation.
Yeah, he's more psychopathic than the Ryan Phillippe character, I'd say. Because Ryan Phillippe, he tries to form a relationship a bit with Juliette Lewis, but then Benicio del Toro just bursts in and says, no, we're not doing that here. This is not like a thing where you have a relationship with the hostage.
Well, that's just covering your own ass. You don't want to get attached if maybe you have to kill her.
Yeah,
fair enough. Sure is a bit psycho, but yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And according to IMDb trivia page, there's a shot of the motel like an hour and 20 minutes in that's supposed to resemble the John Sturges masterpiece, Bad Day at Black Rock. But I didn't really see it. I didn't really think it was particularly John Sturgesian, but what do I know? I'm cinematography blind. I mean, it was a wide shot of a building in the desert. So, I mean, that's kind of Bad Day at Black Rock-ish, but yeah. I don't know. Maybe I missed something.
But if that's the logic, then every movie set in the desert that has an establishing shot references Bad Day at Black Rock.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking. It's like, is this really a John Sturges reference? I don't know. Maybe it is, but it didn't feel that way to me. Maybe I missed something. I'm a little cinematography blind at times, so I don't know. Maybe not. Yeah.
Another reference that is definitely in here, though, is Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh, because that's right.
According to IMDb trivia, the final shootout, the brothel, is the exact same location as the final scene in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
No way. Is that true? That's wild.
That's what IMDb trivia says, and they don't lie. Okay.
Oh, they don't lie, especially with Steven Seagal films. No.
Bought and paid for.
Yep. And also, I believe that the main character's last names are taken from Butch Cassidy, the Sundance Kid.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Real names. Yeah.
Maybe the ending to this was sort of intended as like, this is what happened, because famously Butch Cassidy ends on a freeze frame.
Yeah, that's right. This shows him. Well, I don't want to get into spoilers yet, but maybe we should.
Yeah, we can.
All right.
I mean, there's a great shootout at the motel, but let's be honest, the big one, the one that this movie is remembered for, is the shootout at the end, at the brothel.
Yes. And this movie is famous for its, like, tactical style, you know, lots of reloading and people giving each other cover fire and realism. And it really all comes together with that final bordello shootout in the middle of the desert. And it is one of the best shootouts, probably in movie history, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Continuity is great, which seems like a stupid thing to say, but it just kind of bugs me when people shoot like 100 bullets before you see them reloading.
Yeah, I agree with that. And they don't make them like they used to, you know? I mean, nowadays, a lot of shootouts, they use like CGI muzzle flashes and instead of blanks. And they use like CGI bullet hits on the scenery and CGI squibs. But this movie, the final shootout, or really any shootout in the movie, it has practical scenery squibs, practical body squibs, people using blanks for their guns. Although I do believe I read somewhere on IMDb that they kind of enhanced some of the muzzle flashes with CGI, which I didn't even notice. I mean,
no,
25 years later, and CGI muzzle flashes look god awful, but they look good back then, I guess.
Yeah, supposedly they did it because the actual muzzle flashes didn't show up on camera because they were too fast or something.
Yeah, yeah. Because I guess they're like a split second long, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
So I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
And they also use CGI on the broken bottles that Ryan Phillippe jumps into. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. I think I read that they had to like remove the label from them or something like that.
Yeah. Which is insane. This is the year 2000 and that's flawless CGI.
Yeah. I mean, they don't make them like they used to. I mean, if they did that nowadays, it just looked like a big blob of like blur.
Well, though, like how long have they been removing stunt wires digitally?
Oh, I don't know.
Because that always looks good.
Yeah.
So this might be just sort of similar. I don't know. I'm not a CGI expert.
No, me either.
Did you hear, kind of a tangent, but for No Time to Die, the latest James Bond movie, they had the CGI all the product placement things because Corona had got postponed, so all the product placement was outdated by the time it got released.
Oh my goodness.
So that the CGI the latest model phone over what they shot, shit like that.
No. Oh my gosh. That's, well, you gotta do what you gotta do, I guess.
Yeah.
It's kind of wild that they can't do product placement in the way of the gun either. Like, gotta blur out the names on these bottles. It's like, don't you want that product placement money? I don't know how it works exactly, but
not in this context, I guess. Well, filmmakers wanted the money. It's just that the products didn't want their product visible in that scene.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Once they figured out how the bottles were used, they were like, no, we're out.
We don't want our bottles being used in a bordello shootout that cuts up the main character's forearm.
Yeah.
Which is a good effect. I mean, when he jumps into the well, it turns out to be full of broken bottles, and he like slices up his forearm and he has to remove one of the jagged pieces of glass. That's a pretty good effect.
Yeah, looks great. Also, apparently, yeah, Christopher McQuarrie wanted the character to have a jacket on for the scene because he was afraid that the forearm effect wouldn't look good.
Oh.
Ryan Phillippe was like, are you kidding me? It's fucking hot out here. I'm not wearing a jacket for the scene.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
It works better without the jacket anyway.
Yeah.
The effect looks good. It's probably not that complicated of an effect, but it works really well.
It's not complicated, but it's easy to not look convincing.
Yes. And did you see the guy who got shot in the family jewels with a shotgun?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite parts. I mean, squibs in a guy's pants? That's just crazy. He must have bruises for days.
I like your singular focus.
It's almost like Steven Seagal was in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of cool because in this scene, several things are happening at once. There's a C-section taking place on Juliet Lewis. There's who come in? Oh, the Federales come in first, and then James Caan and his troop of old men come in.
Yeah, they're not the most convincing group of hitmen, but what do I know about hitmen? I've never hired one, but yeah.
It's like James Caan says. He says something like, in my profession, if you meet somebody this old, they've been through a lot or something like that.
Oh, that's right. I didn't catch that part. Yeah, I didn't catch that connection, but yeah, you're right.
And these guys are all old, so, you know, they've been through shit.
Yeah. Then you have the two main characters trying to get the money.
Yeah.
The sacks of money.
The three massive, giant, heavy bags of $15 million.
Oh, yes.
And there's definitely some great dialogue in this. Like, for instance, when James Caan talks about the $15 million to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor says, all of this for money. And then he says, $15 million isn't money. Money is what you take to the grocery store. $15 million is a motive with a universal adapter.
Yeah.
That's good
and
stuff.
It never gets too Tarantino-y. You know, that was kind of my fear, you know, going into this, that I was going to become like a ironically detached Tarantino fest. But, I mean, he keeps it together. And it avoids being too meta, too ironic. Manages to keep it together, you know, without being too insincere.
Yeah. No, I think Macquarie is too good to do a ripoff.
Yeah. The second time watching this, I was kind of going in a little hesitant. Like, I remember this being a bit Quentin Tarantino-y. But then I watched it and I was like, hey, this isn't Quentin Tarantino-y that much at all. I mean, there's a few, like, elements to it that are a little like that. But it's not some insincere meta-fest like you would expect.
No.
Or I expected, at least. Yeah.
It's always better when it's more Peckinpah than Tarantino.
Yes.
And even like the sort of out of place almost comedy with Jeffrey Lewis doesn't really detract.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It still keeps it together, yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny.
Yeah. And of course, Sarah Silverman's in this movie too, credited as Raving Bitch.
Yeah.
That's her character's name.
Yeah, that's the opening scene of the movie where Ryan Phillippe and Benicio Del Toro are just leaning on some guy's car, sitting on some guy's car. And there's this giant line outside of a nightclub. And this one guy's like, hey, get off my car. And his girlfriend is played by Sarah Silverman. And I'd completely forgotten about the scene that she was in it. And I was like, hey, is that Sarah Silverman? And then, of course, she gets to shout some things.
A lot of things. Yes.
It definitely earns its R rating in the language department in just that first scene.
Yes. And then she gets punched in the face for real.
Oh, which
I believe that's
great.
I believe that's what IMDb said, that she got, maybe it was Wikipedia, one of those websites said that she got punched in the face for real by accident, like the Ryan Felipe, whatever his name is. He forgot to, I don't know this guy's name, he forgot to pull the punch and he punched her in the face or whatever, and he had to apologize for a week to her.
Yeah, though of course he was scripted already to hit her, he just accidentally hit her for real.
Oh yeah.
Which is great, because often in cases like, in situations like this, like the girlfriend fires everybody up and then the boyfriends have to fight it out.
Mm-hmm.
But here Ryan Phillippe is just like, no, fuck that bitch. And he punches her in the nose.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this scene is completely detached from everything else in the movie. It doesn't really make any sense. But apparently the studio wanted Christopher McQuarrie to give the characters some backstory, like introduce them in the opening scene. So he was like, backstory? Fuck your backstory. Here's your backstory.
Yeah, because it doesn't really jive with the rest of the film, because wouldn't they have probably been arrested or something like that for disturbing the peace in that scene or something, punching a lady in the face? But they aren't.
Maybe they are.
I don't know.
The movie just jumps ahead in time. You don't know.
That's true, yeah.
Like, on its own, it's a great scene, honestly.
Yeah, foul mouth beginning, but it, as you said, it earns its R rating in the language department, for sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, the violence department, on the other hand, it is pretty violent at times, but it's not like an unrealistic splatter fest. The blood squibs are pretty realistic looking, I'd say.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not like gallons of blood spurting all over the place in slow motion. I mean, it looks kind of what you might expect a real bullet impact to look like at times. Oh, there's that guy that gets shot in the throat with blood everywhere. But other than that, the blood impacts on people being shot are kind of realistic looking rather than gratuitous, I'd say. I mean, it earns its R rating definitely in the violence department as well, but it's not like, you know, a Tarantino film.
Yeah. So my DVD was scratched and I It's like, okay, just to be safe, I'm going to, and because I remembered it being scratched, just to be safe, I'm going to buy another copy that was also scratched, but no, it was all they had in this shop around the corner. So I have the movie on DVD twice, and one of them is rated 16 and the other is rated 12.
Ooh.
Same movie, and somehow these two Dutch DVD releases have different age restrictions.
Is one of them cut or something?
Nope.
I don't know.
Nope. Not no, as far really? As I can okay. tell.
Okay. So 12-year-olds line up to watch a guy being shot in the gonads with a shotgun.
Yeah.
With squib work.
Yes.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Nah, they'll be fine.
Yeah.
That's fun stuff to see.
Teaches kids not to play with guns, I guess.
Yeah.
Or kidnap pregnant women or whatever.
Yeah. Or do anything that's seen in this movie.
Yeah. Donate semen.
Punch Sarah Silverman in the face. Yeah.
Piss in a bottle. We don't do any of those things over here.
Oh, no. And circling back to the final shootout, I really like how tactical it was. And I know that sounds like a very obvious compliment, but there's a really good scene where, like, Benicio del Toro is just, like, as an assault rifle, and he's, like, firing through the walls, like, every inch is a bullet hole.
Yeah.
And it's really cool to see because in most movies, you know, the walls are, like, thick as bricks and you can't shoot through them. But this movie acknowledges that walls can be shot through and they won't give you cover. I mean, they'll give you concealment, but not cover. So, like, and, like, there's a character running through, like, the walls. I'm running past the walls. His bullets are, like, flying through the walls, hitting, like, one through the other. It's a really cool scene, I thought.
Yeah. Almost too perfect bullet holes, though.
Yes, I noticed that, too, yeah. But, I mean, I still like the scene, even though each bullet hole is, like, directly on the same parallel, not parallel line, but each line is, like, perfectly lined up next to the next one to create, like, a straight line of bullet holes. But, I mean, other than that, I thought it was a really cool scene.
Yeah, definitely. I had a feeling while watching this that this was the most Michael Mann movie Michael Mann didn't make.
Oh, that's a good observation. Yeah.
Because he's also really into the tactical, realistic stuff. James Caan also did Thief with Michael Mann.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So there's a connection there. I mean, Macquarie at least had to have watched some Michael Mann movies in prep.
Yeah, like Heat or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And Thief.
Yeah, that's a good It's a good observation, yeah, because yeah, well, the shootouts are pretty Michael Mann-esque.
Yeah, and also apparently, according to Macquarie, this movie is an allegory for independent filmmaking, or for filmmaking. Did you get that any way?
Not until I read that on IMDb or Wikipedia.
Yeah,
because me too. It's like they do all, so one person does all the dirty work, and then somebody else gets all the money. It's just kind of the allegory, right? Yeah, is that what he's trying to say?
The old guy walks away with all the money.
Yeah, that's and it.
Leaves
yeah.
you with nothing, bleeding out.
Dying in the desert, bordellos.
Yeah. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah. I want to die something like that, too. No, just kidding.
I'd rather walk away living with the money, but sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's so weird that after this one, it took like 12 years for Macquarie to direct another movie. I mean, it was Jack busy. Reacher. Yeah, he was busy writing, but like, did he not want to direct? Did studios watch this movie and go like, ah, this guy knows nothing for some reason? I don't know.
I don't know. This is a solid movie. I don't know how anybody could say, well, this guy doesn't deserve to direct again. Because this movie, for like as low budget as they apparently had, they really milk it for all it's worth.
Oh, yeah.
Not sure that's the right way of putting it, but I mean, they milk the budget pretty well. Ring it all out.
Yeah. I'm glad that Tom Cruise gave him another shot with Jack Reacher and then all the Mission Impossible movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm also kind of like really excited what he does when he's done with the Mission Impossible movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If I'd the like Final Reckoning is really going to be the last one, which I think they say
might not be.
They say it will be, right? Didn't Tom Cruise say something along those lines?
Yeah, but they say that about everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it will be. Maybe Tom Cruise is going to say, no, I'm going to do something else from now on. But I don't know. That's a good point.
Yeah. It will probably be the last for Tom Cruise, but I'm sure the studio is going to make some sort of like spin-off sequel television show, which would make sense because it's based on a television show, but still.
Yeah.
The studio is going to milk it some more, probably.
Yes, that's fair to say.
I am definitely curious what he does after this.
Yeah, I was going to say that it might be cool to see him go back to something that's more R-rated with more squib work if he likes that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, Mission Impossible movies are still great, but
oh yeah,
I don't know. I kind of want to squib in them. People getting shot in the crotch with a shotgun.
Yeah. Anything, as long as it's in the crotch. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is attached to write and direct the movie Broadsword, starring Tom Cruise and Henry Cavill.
Ooh.
Great Mission Impossible Fallout re-teaming. And it's going to be a World War II movie, so that might might be interesting. He's also still attached to write the untitled Tom Cruise SpaceX project, which I hope they change that title, or at least their space partner, because... fuck SpaceX and the retard that runs it.
Yes, exactly. Not a big Elon Musk fan either.
No. But you know, he's probably too busy preventing Tesla from dying or something.
I don't know. Maybe Elon Musk can be the bad guy in it. He gets shot in the crotch or something.
For real, though. They have to do it for real.
Yeah.
This man does not know about prophylactics, so we gotta shoot him in the crotch.
It's our only choice. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, so that's all that's listed for upcoming for him for now.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking curious about Final Reckoning, the latest Mission Impossible movie. Big fan of the series. I like their one director per movie approach at the start, but I'm like totally fine that he did four in a row now.
Oh, yeah. I'd have liked John Milius to get in on that action maybe a little bit, but I don't know if that's going to happen ever again. John Milius directing Mission Impossible. The nuke goes off this time.
Yeah. Oh, I see. He's also apparently attached to direct a remake of The Gauntlet, starring Tom Cruise and Scarlett Johansson.
Ooh. A movie starring Tom Cruise. Okay.
Yeah. They work so well together, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's fitting.
And I have not seen the original The Gauntlet, so I have no idea what to expect of this one.
It's an okay movie. It's not Clint's best, but it's watchable.
Hmm. One of the many movies that was at one point maybe going to be a Dirty Harry sequel, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're right about that. Yeah.
So was The Rookie, or so many others probably.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's Christopher McQuarrie. That's The Way of the Gun. Excellent movie. Probably still sort of underseen, maybe underrated. Give it a shot. Watch it.
Yeah, I'm glad I gave it a second shot as well. This movie is very good. Excellent action scenes. It's got the neo-noir elements, but it doesn't get too confusing. Yes, as I said earlier, there's maybe like a twist too far, but I mean, it's not exactly a confusing movie exactly, but you know, it does get a little convoluted and talky at times, but yeah, it holds it together, and it's got Jeffrey Lewis in it, which is always a plus. So I'd say give it a watch.
Great score by Joe Kramer.
Yes, I miss those kind of loud and proud musical scores that aren't afraid to get themselves noticed.
Yeah, and that are distinct, that you sort of remember at the end of the movie.
Yes, because nowadays everything has to be so ambient and, like, not melodic, you know? You got to kind of tone it down because studios think, oh, the audience will think that we think that they're dumb if we have a big, loud, and proud, hummable music score. But, no, that's what we want to hear.
Yeah, great score, great movie. Benicio del Toro, fucking excellent. So James Caan and everybody, really. Check it out.
Yeah.
And run to a cinema just like Tom Cruise would run and go see the new Mission Impossible movie. Obviously not sponsored, but it just looks amazing.
Yeah.
And check out our website, alloutofbubblegum.com. Join the Discord. Mm-hmm. Check out our Patreon. And we'll see you next week.
All right. See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're going to wish you never fucking got up this morning, asshole, because my boyfriend's going to fuck you up.
His name wouldn't be Steve, would it?
And then after that, while he's fucking up your fucking gay uncle over there, I'm gonna fucking cut off your cock and mail it to your mother, you fucking faggot bitch. Gaylord fucking bitch. How do you like that? You like that a lot?
Maybe I'll fight him right now. Come on, child, I'm gonna kick your ass. Let's do this. Why am I fighting child? It's her. Ah! That woman's evil.